Hello everyone, my name is Vlad Glavanu. I am the Head of Psychology and Counseling and Director of the Webster Center for Creativity and Innovation at Webster University Geneva. And it is my great pleasure to be here today with Alex McKay, who is Assistant Professor at Virginia Commonwealth University in the US. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Vlad. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. We're excited to hear your talk a little bit later about creativity and time. But before we get into the topic of creativity and time, my curiosity is, how did you end up studying creativity in the first place?
So it kind of goes back to when I was much younger. When I was 16 years old, I actually started kind of working for a band called Skywind in Minnesota, where I grew up.
Right.
Kind of having this experience was just a really great one in terms of meeting a lot of people who are engaging in creativity and creating music and so forth. And it kind of gave me an eye in terms of the different processes that people used and took to sort of come to their creation and achieve some sort of success.
Right.
So they actually then had the opportunity to do a showcase, which basically, you know, perform a song in front of a very famous producer named Rick Rubin.
Okay.
And so they played their song, and Rick Rubin at the end of it said, "You have to be effing kidding me," and just walked out the room. And after that, it was kind of a devastating experience for them and sort of led to their sort of breaking up.
Oh, I really hoped for a different ending to that story.
No, it was not a good thing. They have kind of played some more shows even more recently too, kind of right. Every once in a while getting back together and playing some songs and
right.
Playing some different shows. But it didn't really end very well. So I kind of saw kind of the bad side of that aspect as well.
Yes.
And then sort of after that, I kind of was snowboarding a lot and kind of was sponsored by a snowboard shop and hoping to try and actually turn that into something. But I injured my knee and sort of kind of dealt with that, where then I had to sort of assess life.
Right.
And generally kind of just decided to go to school.
Yeah.
And then when I was going to school, I met a creativity researcher named James Kaufman, who you know and I know.
Right.
And he sort of kind of got me hooked on this idea, given sort of what experiences I had before. I felt like this was the perfect thing to do, and I've just kind of fallen in love with it since then. And sort of kind of that's how I got into this work and sort of got my PhD and now love doing research on the topic.
Excellent. That is a more complex story than I would have imagined.
Yeah.
With it's peppered with a bit of like obstacles and failure.
Yeah.
And it's really, a creator's story. Do you think from the music, the inspiration you got from music, is there anything from that you carry into your research? Would you say, because some people carry a lot of their practical life into their theory and research, and some others have them like parallel lives pretty much.
I think I did take a lot from that lifestyle back then. The band that I worked for was more of a rock band. So, I mean, it was kind of cohesive groups kind of working together. And so when I started to kind of get more engaged in research and doing that, I've started doing what's called social network analysis and looking at how different people are connected together and how this collaboration impacts creative performance and creative success ultimately. And I just saw that a lot while I was even working for this band and even snowboarding too, which is much more of an individual activity, but people are so connected together while they're doing these activities. And I noticed that across so many creative domains is that this collaboration is so critical to people having success and just enjoyment and what they're creating, that I kind of took those experiences that I had and sort of realized this is exactly what I dealt with and saw and want to study.
Exactly. Well, now I'm going to get like to a more technical question almost.
Yeah.
Maybe we're jumping right in with the network analysis and all, but also your story of the gatekeeper coming in and kind of, you know, telling them this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That shows that networks are not like very democratic, participative, like flat. They're always relations of power and everything. How can people account for that in this type of analysis? How do they usually...
It can be sometimes a little tricky because sometimes it's how many connections a person has, whether how influential they are. But I mean, that's part of it too. But there's also another idea that's kind of been referred to as brokerage, and whether it's kind of connecting otherwise disconnected people or groups together.
Right.
And somebody like Rick Rubin, for example, he's a highly connected person. He has worked with so many influential musicians and bands over the years. But that kind of also makes him sort of connect all these different genres of music that kind of were otherwise disconnected from each other until he kind of came around and sort of helped popularize them and so forth.
Right.
And some of it, it's still a little unclear how to necessarily capture that aspect. One of my colleagues in the States, we've kind of discussed about this aspect of celebrity and how that might play a role. So we've been kind of starting to work on some stuff with that in terms of their celebrity status and how that might impact their success as well.
So basically the influencers and all of this culture. I mean, I think I recently read a book, I'm not advertising for it because I actually don't remember the title, but it was about, the hit makers. So it was something around exactly how popularity and celebrity comes about and so on. And it is always a network type of phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Would you say you're doing a lot of the proper science of network analysis and all? Could anyone use that to predict to some level where creative success might happen? What is the chance of that? What do you think? Like, could we claim some predictive power of that, or just explanatory post factum? That's most what mostly what.
I don't know if we could explain it in advance. There's some research in sociology and organizational behavior and management research that looks at. Like film industry, for example, and looks at collaboration in films and sort of who you're collaborating with and their success impacting your success. Uh-huh. And sort of as their outcomes, sometimes they use whether or not you win an award. So at like the Grammys or the Emmys or so forth for, you know, different genres or domains.
Yeah.
And it's been fairly, I mean, it predicts fairly well in terms of who you're connected to impacts your success and how successful they are as well. So there is some sort of explanation, you know, we can sort of start to see that maybe there is some sort of explanation and results we can take from that and apply to how things go in the real world.
I'm imagining, though, that for every story where we have a positive case, there might be so many stories of nothing happened, right, that we just don't know about.
Maybe. Oh, yeah.
So all these big influencers, maybe they almost got someone to have a chance, but that chance was blown. So
yeah,
it's very interesting. I was thinking, you mentioned these big domains of creativity, but your work, what is your type of creativity that you're mostly studying? What type of creative expression, what area are you studying?
So in terms of kind of the majority of creativity, I do some work kind of just on everyday creativity. What about a different actor or person sort of impacts their creative, just engaging in creative activities and also creative achievement as well. And given that I'm in a business school as well, I also kind of study more of the professional level creativity in terms of how people are, what aspects influence their performance in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And there is some sort of, you know, things do cross in terms of both those aspects as well. So it's not just completely disconnected. They're very overlapping for me as well.
Yeah, everyday life and professional.
Yeah.
And in terms of how you identify creativity, which is always the tricky question, although it does have a simplish kind of definition, what is your preferred way of identifying, measuring creativity? Do you have a, how do you identify it?
So usually when I'm doing research more, I guess, for lack of a better term, to more of the creativity audience and so forth, sometimes I'll use measures that kind of focus on creative achievement, like the creative achievement questionnaire, just engagement in creative activities as well. Then in the management research, it's more ideally, you know, leader-reported creative performance in the workplace. And then with some of the social network research, as I mentioned, I also am using some of these measures as well, but whether or not you win awards, maybe how, this isn't as great of a measure element, but financial performance, kind of how maybe a song or a movie does, for example, because I am doing some research with that with social network analysis. So I measure it, I guess, in a variety of different ways, more of kind of this much more higher level that might even kind of into the big C, big creators kind of territory. Mm. And sometimes just more of just engaging in the creative activity of every day.
Right. So it's quite based on performance and product and real life kind of indicators rather than just potential or something more immaterial somehow. Yeah. It's more concrete.
It's the business side.
the business side. and in terms of your university or your colleagues, or outside of that, do you work, do you have collaborations, do you have projects that you develop with other people? What are the topics that you think are most of interest today, and what is hot to study nowadays in this area?
I think with, especially in the management research, I just think some of the research that's been really popular is kind of the status aspect, kind of how people right. have status, how that impacts their success. Maybe when it comes to a company overall, how the status of the CEO and so forth impacts the company's success. And so that's become a fairly hot topic just within the management research as a whole, and kind of yeah. how status intersects with power. Because status overall is kind of more defined as something that's given to us by other people.
Right.
Whereas power kind of necessarily isn't always synonymous or the same thing as status.
Exactly.
We can take power even though maybe people don't want us to have it, type of thing. So how these can kind of intersect as well can be kind of important.
I wonder, I mean, people make these differences between authority and power, and then legitimate authority and things like that. That is very interesting. And now you're going to talk to us about time and creativity. How did you come to the topic of time? And time is such a philosophical topic, right? So what is in that area? What are you exactly looking at?
So yeah, time is such an extremely broad topic that it's almost encompasses anything. So I've also been sort of fascinated a little bit with what are kind of referred to as temporal individual differences. Mm-hmm. And these are generally just preferences that people have for how they interact with time and how they think about time, how they kind of schedule their life and pace themselves in terms of tasks or projects or just their life as a whole.
Right.
So it kind of encompasses a few different aspects. One of them is called temporal focus, whether or not we kind of look into the past, or we more focus on the present or into the future. And how these impact, I guess, there has been sort of little research, as I'll talk about later, that shows that which way you're looking necessarily impacts your success or your failure, but it likely impacts the way we approach the topic and the creative process that we're dealing with and the information that we use for this. Another one that is called temporal depth, which kind of deals with how far into the past or how far into the future we're looking. Then there's also one called polychronicity, which is deals with a preference for multitasking. So some of the time multitasking is viewed as sort of a detrimental thing for performance, but it's kind of not always necessarily that simple, as some evidence indicates multitasking is actually good. And what can also play an important role in that is whether or not our preferences for this behavior actually match what we're doing. Okay. So there's some evidence, not by me, but by other researchers, that found that actually if you're more polychronic, so you prefer and you like multitasking, if you engage in this multitasking type behavior in more of a creative generation type thing, your ideas that you generate are actually more creative.
Right.
Whereas if you prefer just working on one task at a time, and that's what you do, then your ideas are also more creative. So it's kind of matching your preferences to what you're actually doing then.
I can see how many practical implications there might be out of that,
right? Oh, yeah.
And in terms of workplace, but also our life more generally, I think. One big question here for me, and I obviously, you know this literature inside out, but are we talking about more preference? When you say preference, seems like it's something that a person is quite stable over time, but isn't it very contextual as well? What is the discussion there? I mean, could I change, or depending on the focus or depth, depending on area of my life or period of my life?
I honestly don't know of anything quite to that extent yet. There has been evidence sort of showing that it is a fairly stable individual difference, but it's not extremely stable either.
Right.
So there is possibly some contextual aspect that plays a role there. Because I could definitely see some people maybe in their personal life don't really mind kind of just flowing from different aspects. Yeah. And sometimes just, you know, having a baby, you kind of have to engage in the multitasking aspect.
Right.
Whereas in one's work, they very much need to kind of focus. And so there definitely could be kind of these situational aspects that play an important role for this as well.
Because I'm thinking also, I mean, having a baby is a fortunate, you know, kind of event, but you can think of trauma as well, and how people can get trapped in these kind of temporalities where they relive something of the past. And maybe that was not part of their orientation at all. So I think it would be interesting, and now thinking aloud, a study of ruptures and transitions and life course in terms of these points of focus. Who are the big people who study this temporality nowadays in psychology? I seem to remember at some point, but do correct me if I'm wrong, that Zimbardo was interested in temporal orientation. But
he did more temporal orientation type stuff. There's been a little bit of a shift from the kind of the survey measure that he created. More recently, there's been one by I believe her name, her last name is Ship, and I believe it's Abigail Ship. Very much apologize to her if I get that wrong. Otherwise, there's, for the last few decades, an individual named Alan Bluedorn has been a huge impact, primarily in kind of the management research as well.
Yeah.
My former advisor, her name was Susan Muhammad, and then a colleague of hers and somebody in the management research named David Harrison as well. Uh-huh. And they've been sort of big people researching that. So those are some of the major folks that kind of study this. In more the creativity aspect, there hasn't been quite very many doing it. The major study that's been done, as I mentioned, kind of matching preferences to what the actual task requires, was done by Nora Magyar and Greg Oldham.
Okay.
And they did that study. But otherwise...
And when was that?
That was 2006, I believe.
Okay. So there is some time, but still is not one of the old topics of the field.
No.
Interesting. And what, how methodologically do you approach this? What do you do?
So thus far, the research that I have been doing is either more survey-based.
Right.
Alternatively, it's kind of been more kind of trying to develop some different theory aspects, so more kind of working through the literature and kind of create some sort of cohesive aspect that I guess can be used to study it moving forward. And then ideally, I would kind of love to get some more experiments involved and so forth to study this as well.
Right. And in an experiment, what variables do you think you can manipulate? Because if we agree that it's more of a individual trait somehow, how would you prime people? So it would still be part of that kind of contextual. Yeah.
I think it might be keeping that kind of stable and manipulating other aspects of the situation and sort of seeing how, I guess people, I don't know if adapting is the right word, but generally how they perform then in the end in those situations. So
it's interesting. It also brings to mind this meta creativity kind of work on knowing yourself, right? And then perhaps knowing how you deal with time is part of that. Now, two topics I wanted to bring up because I'm sure people listening might be thinking, oh, time management and procrastination. what do we know about that or any of these if you want to?
Actually, what's been interesting and sort of reviewing a lot of this research and looking into it, there actually isn't a single research study that looks at procrastination with creativity.
Wow.
There's sort of one study that kind of claims it does, but they actually just measured self-reported creativity.
Uh-huh.
So it's not really kind of accurate, and they just had such a very large sample size and the relationship was actually almost essentially zero.
Right.
But that there's a lot of kind of qualitative research where people say, oh, I think it was very important for my creativity. And there's some kind of discussion of whether it might be beneficial for creativity. But the argument that they're making is more of the idea of incubation.
Right.
Which generally we kind of all know is good for creativity and kind of taking time to sort of work through what you're dealing with as can be beneficial. But procrastination is kind of a very different thing because as it's sort of defined, it's very much an avoidance of working and thinking about the task that you're dealing with, which is sort of almost the opposite of incubation, which is sort of taking the time to give yourself thinking about it, taking breaks. So, I mean, I'll even talk about this later, but incubation is really more of effective time management. And some of the research that has looked at time management with creativity finds that time management's generally beneficial.
Right.
Whereas procrastination's kind of actually more poor time management. Exactly. It's avoiding behavior on a task so you can, and doing other things completely unrelated to sort of just do what you can do.
Right. So it's really the negative. It's quite interesting because recently I've been reading a bit more on mind wandering with the A, wandering, and daydreaming, right? So there must be a connection there. Would that qualify as a form of procrastination? I would say many people would say they do, but there is some support that could help the creative process and problem solving. So I guess, do you think a more balanced view of procrastination in terms of creativity could be reached, or maybe indeed it's across the board negative?
I think there could be some sort of... kind of compromise that's met in the end is in some ways there's different, also what's different has been referred to as pacing styles, and sort of the one that it's never actually really been fully tested with creative performance, but it's been argued to be beneficial. But it's this sort of U-shaped aspect where you do work early on when you kind of get the task, and then while you're working towards the deadline, you put less work in, and then when you get close to the deadline again, you're putting more work into your work.
Right.
And so it sort of kind of looks like procrastination, but I would argue that while you're even doing less work, you're still kind of thinking through what you're dealing with, kind of gathering information, and kind of just more engaging in other aspects of the creative process.
Right.
So it's not necessarily leaving everything to the end. So
exactly. So there are some nuances and some subtleties to to help people work. I also remember some studies done on creative habits, if you want, and how people work, right, day, night. They all seem to be quite variable. I don't know if there is even a pattern there. Would you say that, I mean, is there a time of day we should be more...
Thus far, no. Actually, I will be talking about that a little bit. So when you sort of look across a lot of famous creators, especially, you don't really necessarily see a pattern. They all kind of engage in creativity at different times. Some work in the middle of the night. Others wake up very early and sort of start working. Other people wake up, you know, at 2 p.m. and sort of then start working.
Right.
To me, it sort of looks like there's no pattern. But what I think the interesting thing is then when you break down and look at a lot of these creators across their lives, they engaged in this type of pattern almost consistently day to day.
Yeah.
So it's sort of when we're looking between these different people, we don't see it. But when we look within the person and their day-to-day lives and their day-to-day creativity, you kind of see more of it. Where kind of one example I'll talk about later is Pablo Picasso has argued to, you know, he woke up late, he kind of slept in late, he got a late start to his day, but he was fairly consistent across his life in terms of this is how he engaged in creativity.
Right. So whatever you do, even what might seem like bad habits, do them consistently.
Yeah.
Especially if you're Picasso.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Yeah, yeah. So there is a lot to learn, I think, from this area. Plus, I guess it affords a lot of interesting article titles that I can almost see you giving in the future, because there's so many play on words with time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Time is money, is creativity. Can that be an article? Maybe.
Oh, there could eventually be thousands.
It's going to be nice. So just to conclude, what would you like to do in the future? So you said more experimental work. What kind of interesting variables or ideas would you put into the mix with these studies of temporality and creativity?
Yeah. Oh man, that's a big question.
Yeah, it is. I can give you one idea, by the way, because it came to my mind. Well, I don't know if it's really a good idea, but it's an idea. I woke up late today. No, so it is about audiences and time, because I feel like in our talk, we've been focusing a lot on creators and time, but it takes time to appreciate. There have been studies, of course, done on how far behind people are, like early adapters, and then, you know, all of that cycle of innovation. But there might be something on the audience side and time and creativity. Maybe that's one,
that definitely sounds like something that could easily be a research question and something looked at in terms of how do, you know, different audiences and their, I guess, maybe even their temporal orientations kind of impact whether or not they're early adopters or late adopters and so forth.
Alex, let's do this research.
Let's do it.
Perfect. But what would you say? Would you combine part of your social networks with time and temporal orientation, or are these two separate areas?
I would love to combine them. Right now, they're kind of a little bit sort of disconnected, kind of separate areas of research that I'm working on right now, which, I mean, is good, but I always love to kind of figure out what's the point of intersection. And I think with some of the temporal aspects, there's so little that's been done in creativity that it's sort of just creating the kind of, I guess, the base.
Yeah.
Then you can kind of work from and integrate other aspects into that. So,
yeah.
And that's sort of what I found is while there's a few kind of studies across creativity and in management looking at creative performance, but they're so kind of disconnected and they kind of take terms that should be used in a different way. And so it's kind of trying to connect it all together in this very disconnected research.
Maybe that is the whole kind of thing about creativity research, right?
Yeah.
That it's at the same time very messy, and then that has pockets of organization somewhere around.
So right now I've been hopefully trying to get that a little bit of organization and then kind of move from there. And then, yeah, I would love to kind of take this social network stuff and bridge it in, because I mean, so a lot of different creators kind of have a different temporal focus, even whether they kind of more think about the past or the present or the future when they're creating their work.
Right.
And how does it impact potentially? And I have no idea if this is something that does occur, but what if somebody with more of a future focus collaborates with somebody more of a past focus? And how does this different frame of reference sort of impact their, I guess, their success?
That would be a very nice study. And maybe we get closer and closer to how to make a hit. Yeah. And yeah, how to understand creativity. And some people might even get rich out of all this knowledge. But at the end of the day, if we come back to exactly where we started, prediction will always be difficult with this topic. But good explanations are in need.
Oh, yeah, definitely. In need of that.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Alex.
Thank you.
It was very interesting talking to you. So Alex will be giving a talk now on campus. But for those of you who will not make it, we had a conversation about time, creativity, social networks. Alex McKay is teaching and doing research at Virginia Commonwealth University. And for those of you who want to know more about creativity innovation, do check our website, podcast.webster.ch. Thank you again, Alex.
Thank you.